Blog Talk Radio.
It's Rich Wilson. Welcome to Fantasy Baseball Live. We're here every Sunday evening, except it's not Sunday, guys. It is Monday. Talking baseball, talking fantasy baseball, talking whatever we want to talk about. If we want to talk about grapes, we'll talk about grapes. If we want to talk about how cold it is up in Canada, we're going to talk about how cold it is. And of course, Tim was just telling me it almost hit minus 50 degrees up there, which is just stupid. Timmy, how are you?
Ah, a little bit chilled, but other than that, I am doing absolutely great, Rich. You know, hey, we're not getting the snow that you guys are getting on the East Coast, so I'll take that cold. It goes away, and you can dress with layers. But my shovel and my back, not a good mix.
Well, Timmy, as you know, I am in Las Vegas, and when I got here, it was really turbulent as we were landing, and the pilot came on and said, sorry about the turbulence, it's raining outside. Tim, it is the desert here. How can it possibly rain? And today it was in the 50s. I mean, it was cold in Vegas, Tim, cold.
You just hold on a sec, Rich. Yeah, that's a tiny violin I hear playing in the background.
Timmy, but good news, my friend, as I reach into my bag, and I'm not going to actually take them out. Oh, here it is. I will take them out. I have two pieces of paper. The first one says, win 2015 Pro Baseball Championship, the Cardinals at 12-1, Tim. 12-1 for the Cardinals. And to win the White Sox, 15-1, Tim. 15-1. We have $100 invested in each one of those teams, you and Bob and who was the other gentleman? Was it Jacob? I believe it was Jacob.
It was Jacob, yes. The last name, Jacob B, we'll call him, because neither Jacob one of us B. probably pronounced his last name right.
and Tim, we're going to actually, let's play it right now as we're in Vegas and it's fun. So I asked them before I made the bet, I said, do you have any other games that I can play around baseball? They go, we have any other games you can play? Well, sure. So they gave me, Tim, a list. Two pieces of paper, and it's got season wins and like minus 115. And I don't even know what all that stuff means, but apparently the Atlanta Braves, Tim, are going to win 75 and a half games. I don't know how they're going to win 75 and a half games, Tim, but that's what they projected to win. Your buddy, the Miami Marlins, 81 games, Timmy. So that's, and then the Washington Nationals over under 93 and a half games. You believe that?
I think those are in the right area. I sort of like the Marlins. What did they have, 83?
81, over under 81. So 50, yeah, so that's, they're going to go 50-50. And I don't know what the minus 115 means. I have no idea what that means, Tim.
No, I'm not a real serious gambler myself, Rich. But, it's got to mean something or Vegas wouldn't be posting it.
And let's see, I'm looking, glancing, Tim, at the worst team, and it looks like it is your Philadelphia Phillies at over under at 68 and a half games, Tim. Ooh.
Yeah, and you know what? I think I'd take the under, Rich.
I think I would as well. But, Tim, I'm going to play this game, and I sent you a quick note just to have a couple of names for me. This is just between you and me. We're going to put $20 down, Timmy, because we can do that. 10 for you, 10 for me. I'm going to pay for it out of my own pocket. I don't have the big $100 like you to put a big time bet. And it's going to be the most regular season home runs. I'm just going to give you a couple stat lines. Giancarlo Stanton is the favorite, Tim, 6-1. So not a whole lot of money. Not going to make a lot of money if we bet him. Jose Abreu is 8-1. E5 comes in at third at 12-1. On par with Chris Davis. They're thinking that Chris Davis might come back. Jose Bautista after that. Mike Trout at 18-1. Anthony Rizzo at 20-1. Paul Goldschmidt at 20-1. And then it starts to really ratchet up, Timmy, with Chris Carter, George Springer, 25-1. And then Adam Jones, 40-1. Albert Pujols, Prince Fielder, 40-1. I like that, Timmy. Gregory Polanco, 60-1. I thought Chris Bryant, 61. Ryan Braun, 60-1. Joey Votto at 100-1, Timmy. 100-1. Adam LaRoche at 100-1. So I'm going to just say there's some random names out there. Timmy, give me three names that you think might actually hit the most number of home runs. I've got my favorite already, but I want to hear your three.
Well, if I was going to pick three, I think when you look at the low odds, there's no point in throwing $10 down on low odds. You got to have some money here to get back. So I'm going to go with Prince Fielder, Chris Davis, and,
Chris Davis, as in that's Chris Davis. That's only 12-1. The other Chris Davis with the K, Tim, is not listed here. So
okay.
Chris
Davis, 12-1. Yeah, I thought Davis is a little better than that. The only one that sticks out to me is Prince Fielder at 40-1.
Tim, that's what I had. It's exactly what I had. So let's go Prince Fielder to win 40-1 odds, Tim. I'll go back to Caesars tomorrow. And I went back, even though they're on, I think they're in chapter 11, Tim. So we might not see our money even if we win. So, because I looked at the sports book, I'm staying at the Cosmopolitan, and it was a little tiny room. And they said, go down to another place for the sports. And I wanted to go to like a big casino. And I'm thinking, can that big, gigantic resort really go out of business? I can't see it, Tim. So that's where I went back. But I don't put $20. Let me do this. If we win, Tim, that's $800, right? Isn't 20 times 40 $800?
It certainly is. Yeah, that I like those numbers. If you're gonna throw $20 away and you're gonna gamble, why not go with some high odds? What's the worst that can happen?
What we lose, Tim.
Oh, yeah.
We lose my $20, just FYI.
Okay, I wasn't going to bring up the fact that my investment is fairly marginal in this project, Rich.
And they have the field, Tim, which I thought was really lame. The field is at 10-1. I mean, that's really lame. I didn't want to do that, but nor did I want to do Freddie Freeman at 100-1. I thought that was like throwing your $20 away, or Todd Frazier at 100-1. I can't imagine that happening.
No, I think if you're going to go for long odds, you got to go with somebody that at least has a remote chance. And let's face it, Prince hasn't been healthy for a few years. If that neck is back in good shape, the park
in Texas,
we like it. Yeah, he could hit 40 home runs this year.
Absolutely. Interesting. Just a couple of other people here, Tim. George Springer at 25-1. I found that to be interesting. Does he have that kind of power, Tim? Because you're going to have to hit 40 home runs to win.
I would think 40's in the right area. I think we can take Cruz out of the mix with the move to Seattle. So that leaves you with last year it would be Trout and Stanton with 37 or so, something like that. I think low 40s, 41, 42 should give it to you.
Yeah, so Trout's at 20-1. That's just it's not enough for big shooters like us, Tim. I mean, we $400 return on our investment. Really? No, we got to go bigger than that. We're going Prince. So, Tim, all the way with Prince Fielder. So, fun little bit. Guys, if you want to get in touch with us, the best way to do that is on the Twitter, at TimothyLMC, at TimothyLMC for the great Tim McLeod. And, of course, you can get myself at Rich Wilson FSG, at Rich Wilson FSG. If you want to go out and join our Facebook group, it is called Prospect 361 Dynasty League Groups. And let me tell you, it's a lot more than just Dynasty League. So actually, you're joining Facebook now just to join the group. It's a tremendous community that our good friend Mainskin monitors and manages and just does a really, really good job. And finally, if you want to go out and rate and review us, you can do that, of course, on iTunes. Tim, and we got what I thought was one of the best reviews ever, if I can bring them up. And of course, they're not coming up. But a guy gave us a 5-star and says, I don't play fantasy baseball. I'm just a baseball fan. This podcast measurably enhances my enjoyment of each season. Thanks, guys, for doing that. That's by Las Vegas 1234. Tim, I thought that was the best thing we've ever gotten. I mean, people just love the game of baseball and they like listening to us. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, that's tough to beat, because if I had to wager on our listening audience, I would say quite a few quite a high percentage are people playing fantasy baseball, and to have somebody who's just interested in the game enjoy our weekly banter, that is awesome, Rich. I agree.
So, Tim, we're going to start off. We have a quick out-of-the-gate segment, but we're going to skip over and do our listener questions right off the bat. And there's one, Tim, I do not think I sent this to you. It came in today, and I thought it was definitely one we had to do, given, I don't want to say it's heat that we got. People seem to like the goofiness that we talked about. But apparently, here it is, Sean McAdams. Tim, he was the one, or let me just read his thing. I listen to your show religiously and probably know me as the guy that guessed Tim's middle name. Now, for people who are not, you know, kind of been around for a long time, Tim, we play these goofy games all the time, and we had somebody guess your middle name for L, and Sean McAdams did that. Now, Tim, if they want to find out your middle name, they got to go back and listen to old episodes, correct?
Start guessing all over again.
I was listening to your last show while setting up the produce department that I work at in California, and laugh what I heard about the grapes that never die. What's funny is the glucose in the grapes is what's supposed to make them go bad. Grapes in the right refrigeration can last a very long time. But also, recently, we got a new product to use in our department called Produce Fresh that allows the produce to last even longer. The product is perfectly safe to consume in small quantities. A lot of products like leaf lettuce, ginger apples, and that sort we put into the solution. The product is also going to be put in our sprinkler system to help every product last longer. Now, Tim, this is an awesome response. Somebody took the time. He actually wrote this entire thing with his iPhone, which absolutely blew me away. Big words and everything, Tim, which I found to be remarkable. But why? This is not healthy. This cannot be healthy to have grapes last for 3 months. Tim, I don't care. You cannot have a grape last for 3 months.
Well, I guess my concern would be the definition of small quantities, Rich.
I know. I just, those little sprayer things you go to those things, they're like little misters, Tim. I don't think that's good. And, I'm now deeply, deeply concerned. I think I'm just going to stop eating at all.
Well, is that what I thought it was hand wash. I'm learning something new even as we chat.
Okay, Sean, we appreciate that. He did have a fantasy question, Tim. So in my 18-team keeper league points league, hitter points are awarded with 1 point for total base, 1 point for RBI, and one for run and stolen bases. No negative points for strikeouts. How valuable is Chris Davis, who is eligible at first and third in this type of format? So he doesn't get any strikeouts. There's no negatives, Tim, because that's where Chris Davis would be really bad. But if it's 1 point for total bases, you got to think if he comes back now being on the Adderall, you got to think he's good for 25 to 30 home runs, not going to get any stolen bases and a ton of RBIs. I think he's pretty valuable. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. How many players last year at third base hit 30-plus home runs, Rich?
Probably nobody. Maybe, how many did Josh Donaldson hit? Probably 25?
Yeah, you got the answer right. Nobody. If Davis comes back and plays to his 2012 levels, okay, or 2013, I think you got a guy that can hit 30 home runs, especially with the Adderall problem solved. I think we'll see a little more focus this year. When you look at total bases, he's got to be up in the top, easily in the top 6, 7, I would think. Even if he doesn't come anywhere near that massive season he had a couple of years back. So, yeah, I think it's a great pick. I think you got to have Davis at third base. First base, that's another issue. But at third, he's a lock.
Yeah, I mean, that's where you would play him, Tim. I totally agree with you there. And, I think it's a very, 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 very good pick. Tim, are you hearing any clicking or beeping, because I've got two drafts going on and it's CBS, you know, when you type in your chat and it comes back and beeps in your ear. I mean, are you hearing any of that?
Absolutely nothing, but I'll take tips because I think I'm in one or two of those, Rich. So you'll okay. Share any industry secrets you might have.
All righty, Timmy, and it's very distracting as people are texting each other to hear the CBS blips going on. Anyway, Cletus00 from Prospect 361, he said, just started listening to the show and have really enjoyed it so far. Tim, why do they have to say so far?
Yeah, that has a connotation that things could drop off a cliff very quickly. And like, we've been doing this for a couple months now, Rich, so, you know, I think we're reasonably safe.
Yeah, I don't know. They do fall off a cliff sometimes. Okay, anyway, my question is a keeper question, as I'm having a hard time about who to keep. It's a 14-team head-to-head points league. We get to keep three players at the previous year auction prices. Any help would be appreciated as I keep going back and forth on these players. The players are Georgie Springer at $1, Christian Yelich at $3, Cole Calhoun at $1, and Nelson Cruz at a whopping $12. Yikes. Alex Wood at $6. Jacob deGrom at 10, which is surprising, and Yordano Ventura at 1. Timmy, which of these three would you keep?
If it was me, it's a very, very easy decision. Scrap the pitching, go with the bats. Springer, Yelich, and Calhoun. $1, $2, $3,
yep,
$5.
$1, $2, $3.
$5 invested. You've got power from Springer and Calhoun. You've got runs scored from Yelich and Calhoun. Stolen bases from Springer, Yelich, and 5 to 10 from Calhoun. For $5, you simply can't go wrong.
I totally agree with you, Tim. That's exactly what I had as well. It's good when we agree. I know Perry doesn't like it when we agree, Tim, but I know our listeners do when we're at opposite ends on their listener questions. That's usually, I tell them to go with you, but unless I think you're wrong, then I'll tell them to go with me. But it is good when we agree. Here we go, Tim. The last one is from Melissa Johnson email. Hey, Rich, I really enjoy the podcast. Now, granted, Tim, if you really enjoy the podcast, good chance you get a chance. You say that, you're going to get your email read pretty much, right?
Well, you know, if you say we totally suck, could you please answer our question? It probably won't cut the mustard, Rich.
I get a lot of those on my site. Tim, I probably get a dozen to 15 questions a day on my site, and a lot of it are just, you're completely wrong. Can you answer this question for me? It's just like, really, dude?
Yeah, like, it's like, yeah. They slam you, and then they ask you for a favor, right?
Exactly, yeah. Okay. Anyway, hi, Rich. Really enjoy the podcast. Your keeper advice last year helped me propel me from bottom of the league to third last year, Tim, and I was hoping for your help again to push me to the top of the league this year. So I'm assuming I got her to third, so it's your time to push her to first. So I'm going to let you answer this one. My league details include 12 teams, 6x6, quality starts, and doubles are the extra categories. It's interesting. Doubles, that makes Altuve very worthwhile there. Rotisserie league, and we keep 5 players each season with no limitations on how long we can keep a player. By keeping the 5 players, we lose the first 5 rounds of the snake draft. So essentially, the draft starts in round 6. I have the 10th pick in the snake draft. Here are options, Tim. She's got a really good team. Mm-hmm. Paulie Goldschmidt, Anthony Rendon, Buster Posey. I'm interested in that. Let's assume it's a one-catcher league, Tim. Anthony Rizzo, Hunter Pence, Gregory Polanco, Starling Castro, Billy Hamilton, Jonas Cespedes, Corey Kluber, Jordan Zimmermann, and Julio Teheran. She needs 5 of these players, Timmy.
Well, I think the biggest problem here is looking at that stash that Melissa has accumulated. She should be lobbying for more keepers. It's just not fair. She's got way too many options. But I think when you look at the bats, I'm all Goldschmidt, Anthony Rendon, Anthony Rizzo. Those 3 are musts. I'm going with Buster Posey. Yeah, I look at that 89-90 RBIs. You know, he's got himself a pretty decent spread over the next catcher in the RBI category. And the power batting average, it's a nice package. And then I'll go with just 1 starting pitcher. And how can you pass on Corey Kluber and those 269 strikeouts? I know Zimmermann and Teheran are both great pitchers, great options, but with the 10th pick, I'm sure you'll be able to get, or hopefully can get, one of those 2 guys back. So it's 4 bats plus Kluber for me, Rich.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I did say one catcher league just to try to maybe see if you would wiggle out of picking Buster Posey. But let's face it, Tim, Buster Posey is the best offensive catcher on the board. So if you get a chance to keep him, even in a one catcher league, I do think you have to do it. Gregory Polanco could have that breakout season. Still not seeing it, Tim. I would not be surprised if it takes him a couple more years to really pull it together. But other than that, I think those are the five strongest guys. So I think that makes a lot of sense to me.
Well, and if you look at Polanco, he's going in round 9 to 10 in a 15 team. So that means you can push him back to probably 12, 13 in a 12 team. If you want Polanco, I think you can get him back in this format and move forward from there.
Yeah, Hunter Pence is probably the guy that's on the bubble. You know, I mean, I think I'd rather have Kluber over Pence. I could go back and take a look at the ADPs out on the NFBC to see who's higher. But, I mean, that'd be the only other option, would be Hunter Pence.
Well, yeah, and basically what you're doing, I think, Rich, is looking at trading off Posey for Pence, because I don't think you can do it. You know, Goldschmidt, Rendon, and Rizzo, you got to have those three. So it's just a matter of whether or not the edge with Posey at catcher is bigger and you think a better situation than, per se, Pence. Pence is a fine keeper, but I just think Posey's a better direction to head.
So Posey is number 21 off the board, Tim. So he's got an ADP of 21. Pence has an ADP of 62. So he's right on the edge of that five, right? So that fifth round, so he would be just two picks over, but you would say that's included. And let's see, Corey Kluber is actually pick number 33. So she's keeping five players in the first five rounds who are draft eligible in the first five rounds. So I think you did a good job by her. Timmy, let's move on. Let's just go to the kind of the news of the day and of the week, and then we'll go back and pick up kind of our quick off the bat segment, which we didn't do, Tim. Obviously, the big news today was Yoan Moncada signed with the Boston Red Sox, Tim. And I don't know if we ever played where he was going to sign. I'm surprised, at least to me, Tim, I'm surprised he signed with the Red Sox. What about you?
I am as well. I really thought the Yankees were going to dip into the vault and come out with all the cash, but Hank put the brakes on apparently at 27.5, and that simply wasn't enough to get it done.
You know, it's funny. I know Yankee fans hate, and I know we got a lot of Yankee fans that listen to our broadcast, and there's a lot of Yankee fans out there that don't like the fact that the Yankees are starting to show some physical constraints, Tim, but bravo for them for showing some physical constraints, because they've got to get that payroll in line so that they can like start to right the ships, because part of the problem is they've got such an old team that all these old guys are playing. But the difference here is Yoan Moncada was a 19-year-old kid. So if you're going to pay all these other guys, the Carlos Beltrans of the world, $45 million, wouldn't you rather just pay $60 million to a kid that's 19 years old? That's what I didn't understand about it.
Well, I agree with you. I have some problems with the whole concept, Rich. Hey, I don't begrudge Yoan Moncada from the money that he is getting. All the more power to him. But how does that relate to, say, Chris Bryant as a first-round number one pick that gets a paltry 6.7 mil, I believe it is, or mm-hmm. 7.6, somewhere in that range. There's a problem right now with the way Major League Baseball is approaching this whole situation. And I'm not saying that Bryant or Appel or any of these guys are getting, per se, punished, but is it fair for a kid, because he happens to be born in Cuba versus a kid born in the U.S. of A., to look at such a huge discrepancy at signing?
Well, you sound like Scott Boras. I mean, that's exactly what he will tell you. And there's something that is really, really wrong. There is a hole in this whole draft process, or lack of draft process, and that is these guys coming over from Cuba. They fall through the cracks, and you see a kid who's basically, the investment is $63 million in a 19-year-old. You can argue, these guys, Chris Bryant coming out at 21 years old, signing for 6.7, was probably in the free agent world and a free market society, Tim, would have probably been a $30 or $40 million player. What I think you're going to see, and the new administration has talked about this, is a worldwide draft, and it's going to come sooner rather than later because they got to get some control around here because, quite frankly, it's also not fair to the Tampa Bays of the world or the San Diego Padres. They don't have the kind of money that, you know, that the Boston Red Sox, Yankees, et cetera, can spend $50 or $60 million on a 19-year-old. So that's not fair as well. That Yoan Moncada should have been put in next year's draft. He should have been eligible to be the number one pick for, what is it, for the Arizona Diamondbacks to have picked and paid him $8 or $9 million. That's what should have happened.
Well, yeah, you know, it sort of makes me giggle a little bit, Rich. When I think back to the whole spiel that occurred with the revisions to the posting clause, okay, the big argument there was we have to cap the posting. We have to do something about it so that it's fair for all the teams. Well, now you've got a situation that isn't fair to all those teams. You've got a different posting clause in Korea, a different one in Japan. Cuban players are treated differently from North American-born players. Major League Baseball has to get together with the Players Association, and they have to tidy this up, and right smartly, I believe.
Yeah, well, the problem is the Players Association are perfectly happy with Yoan Moncada getting $63 million, right? They're absolutely ecstatic that he's getting that. The owners, though, Tim, they're going to be seeing money going from their pockets to a player's pocket going, whoa, for a 19-year-old, we've got to fix this. So that, I'm sure, will be collectively bargained. Hopefully they can do it before collective bargaining comes up. It actually might be after next season, so maybe it will come sooner rather than later. What we're seeing, though, Tim, is clearly, I don't know if you're following the U.S. politics, the Obama administration is definitely loosening up things with Cuba, and you know, the Republicans don't want to do that, which I think is totally wrong. I think we should open up those lines of communications. Yes, I know that Cuba is a communist country, but I mean, come on, we're 30 years from the Bay of Pigs and all of that kind of stuff. So if that we start to can see even more cooperation between the two countries, you could see almost every one of the Cuban players coming over. And I think you're going to see that in Oliveira and some of the other guys that are coming over now.
Well, yeah. And you know what? It's sort of a two-edged sword in a lot of ways, Rich, because you're aware that Cuba won the Caribbean World Series.
Yes, I am.
Were you also aware that OFAC is not allowing any of the prize money for winning that tournament to go back to the Cuban players?
I did not hear that. Wow. That's not good.
Well, you know, what they're saying is it's going back to Cuba, to the government, to their sports federations, mm-hmm. whatever, and they are withholding all of the prize money for the players that won that Cuban World Series. So even though things on the surface appear to be softening a little bit, if you look a little bit deeper, there's still a lot of issues that have to be worked out. And I hope they do, and soon.
I totally agree with you. That political speech was given by Mr. Tim McLeod, Canadian descent. So, and I think you're spot on, Tim. I mean, it is unfair for baseball players not to be able to get the prize money that they want, quote, fair and square. But, you know, I don't know if you know, Yoan Moncada did not defect. He was allowed to leave by the government.
Yeah, I'm more than well aware of that. And it's going to be very interesting to see what the government has to say about that $31 or $32 million or so that he is now owed by the Boston Red Sox. How much control over that do they have? Can he bring some of that back to Cuba for his family? What can he do? What can't he do? Just solve the whole thing and move forward, Rich.
Yeah, well, we'll never know what happened to that $31.5 million, Tim, but between the two of us, a lot of it's going to go back to the government. Just come on. Let's talk about him as a baseball player. So first of all, Tim, I mean, there were stories of maybe $40 or $50 million he would sign for, and then the penalty on top of that, so $80 to $100 million. But clearly, it was not, and he signed for a lot less. Well, a lot less than Ruzny Castillo, almost $10 million less than Ruzny got, but even less Yasmani Tomas. So are we reading and hearing and thinking, can you start to make the observation that maybe he's not as good as they thought he was?
No, I don't think that's the case. We're talking about a 19-year-old kid. And we're talking about a 19-year-old that basically at this stage of the game has basically attended showcases, and they've got tape from Cuba that they're watching. It's a very, very, very small sample size that they've looked at with this kid. You know, we haven't seen him in a game yet. And for a team to pay $31.5 million for that, I think speaks volumes as to what they believe his potential is. How many other kids would they pay $31 million to?
Not very many. I think you're spot on, Tim. I think the reason that Ruzny Castile and Yosmani Tomas a little bit less than Castile is just that there's a body of work there. There was a body of work in the Siri National organization, which is their highest level. Basically, Yohan Makai was an 18-year-old playing, and he was a reserve player. I think he got maybe 100, 115 at bats. So there's not a lot of length to what he's done at a very high level. So, and I think that was for being down. If it would have been maybe 2 or 3 years from now, he could have been a $100 million guy easily. But Tim, let's talk. We were both surprised at the Red Sox. And let me make sure I got this right. So Yomikata, 6'3" and 210 pounds. It doesn't, from everybody I've talked to who has seen him firsthand, no way, they're telling me, no way he stays at shortstop. So he's at second or third. Well, Dustin Pedroia, Tim, if I understand the math correctly, is signed until 2021. Pablo Sandoval, which we're going to talk about him in a few minutes, is signed until 2019. Okay, well, let's throw him out in the outfield, Tim. He's got apparently a hose for an arm, so pulling him in right field. Well, Hanram's out there till 2018, so maybe there's a chance there. Ruzny Castile's there till 2020, and Mookie. I mean, where does this guy play in a couple of years when he gets brought up?
Well, a lot can happen in a couple of years, Rich, and I think a lot has to happen because right now the Sox have a little bit of a dysfunctional lineup. Two options. Hanley Ramirez goes to first base. He slides into the outfield.
Interesting. I have not heard anybody talk about Hanram at first base. That is, I'm going to use the B word. That's a brilliant observation, Tim.
Why, thanks, Rich. I don't know who I stole it from, but it had to be somebody. The other option.
Next time, I'll use the other B word next time, Tim. But okay. Well, that's actually a brilliant observation.
Well, thanks, Rich. there's that situation, and let's face it, at some point in time, Pablo Sandoval is probably not going to be able to play third base. We saw the shape he reported in at spring training. And round is a shape, folks. It really is. But, you know, you could look at a situation where Mancada ends up at third base with Sandoval at first. Basically, it's going to involve shuffling somebody to first base. And I think the two likely targets, based on what they have as far as personnel is concerned, have to be either Hanley Ramirez or Sandoval.
I had not thought about the Hanley Ramirez. I just assumed it would be Pablo, particularly Tim, one of the best photos ever taken. I mean, that, I don't know. I'm sure the angle wasn't quite right. Maybe he was slouching. That was not a good picture, Tim. I mean, that was not his slimming clothing, none of that stuff. He looked bad, Tim. And of course, everybody in the internet world just took it and did all kinds of crazy stuff with it. And you cannot be happy if you're a Boston Red Sox fan, if you are Ben Sherrington and the Boston ownership team. But then again, Tim, they bought a fat guy. I mean, what were they expecting?
Well, yeah, he wasn't going to show up for camp slim and trim, Rich. But you forgot a whole group, thousands of people that are glad to see Pablo out there at third base. And that's all the people down the third base line. They're now sitting in the shade.
That's very, very true. I don't know, Tim, I looked at his legs, and everybody else was looking at his gut. Do you see his legs? I mean, his legs are, I mean, they were fat people legs. I mean, they couldn't see his ankle at all. It was just like, it just was straight down. And that is a big, big man.
Yeah, he's too young. I'm just looking at my legs. Right? He's too young to be supporting cankles, I think, Rich.
Exactly. Tim, we do have to talk. Now they've added yet another piece. I mean, at some point, I mean, it is a ridiculous system. Not quite as good as the Cubs system, but it's arguably right there with the Cubs. And it's interesting, Tim, if you think about it, they've done exactly the same strategy as the Cubs have done. They have got tremendous batters. And in fact, they're a little bit older, so they've got more established batters. So you would argue that the Red Sox even have a potentially a higher upside because they got a better blend of major league talent and minor league talent. But none of the, neither the Cubs nor the Red Sox have any pitching. It seems to me, or I guess besides Lester, it seems to me that the Red Sox, this gives them even more credence to eventually this year trade for Cole Hamels. Or are they going to just wait till next year when David Price and Johnny Cueto and Samardzija, Fister, Leyto, Zimmerman, all those guys come up? I mean, at some point, Tim, they do have to have some pitching.
Well, you know, they've got an offense that can contend for the World Series. They've got a pitching staff that will stop them from contending for a World Series this year. I really like Henry Owens for, say, 2016. But at some point in time, if the Sox are going to contend for the World Series this year, they have to pick up a pitcher. It's inevitable. The five that they have right now, hey, they've got a great group of number threes and fours, as we've discussed before. They need an ace. So if they're serious about contending, and I would have to think with the money they're tossing around this offseason between Ramirez and Sandoval, Castillo, and now Moncada, they're serious about winning. So they're going to go out and get a starting pitcher at some point in time. When? Who knows? But they simply have to, Rich.
Well, Tim, John Farrell's come out and said that Shane Victorino is his right fielder, and that, you know, he didn't say above Mookie Betts, but I'll say above Mookie Betts. If they don't want Mookie Betts, I'm telling you, Mookie Betts and, you know, probably Manny Margot and a throw and a pitcher is going to get you Cole Hamels. I mean, why not just move him?
Yeah, I would think so. You know what happened as a result of Farrell's statement? There was a collective sigh and giggle from, oh, probably about 30 million people north of the border, Rich.
Yeah, because that's what you experienced with John Farrell was up that way.
Yeah, he's not one of my, he's not all, I don't think all that a lot of people think he's made of.
World Series champion, Tim. He's a World Series champion.
Okay, yes, and with that collection of players, put it this way, without Farrell behind the bench, they didn't have a chance, Rich. How's that?
There's no way. First of all, there's no way that Shane Victorino's played more than 120 games, 100 games. There's no way, Tim. I know he did at the World Series year, but this is a guy who's always getting injured, always pulling hammies. You got to love the makeup because the guy plays really hard, but he just is an injury-prone guy. He's an older player now, so I don't think even if he starts the year off, Tim, he's not going to end the year off. And Mookie Betts is ready, man. They got to let him play.
I totally agree, but based on what John Farrell said, that Victorino is going to be a starter, it does create some serious, serious problems when you start looking at us fantasy folk who are now heading into draft season. You know, most of us were looking up until this statement at Mookie Betts generating 550-plus at-bats this year and basing his value, you know, on that number of at-bats. Well, if Victorino even gets in 200 at-bats, well, where does that leave Mookie sitting down 350, 400? That doesn't make him a 7th, 8th round pick, Rich.
I know, that's the trouble, Tim. Okay, Mr. Big Shot, Mr. Tout Wars Champion, Mr. on every league I'm in, what are you doing with Mookie Betts now? I mean, do you drop them a couple of rounds, or do you say, no way Shane Victorino is going to be playing? He's the fourth outfielder, and he's playing once or twice a week, and Mookie Betts is getting 450 to 500 at-bats.
I totally avoid Mookie Betts and Rosny Castillo. Gone. They are no longer a part of my redraft plans for this year, Rich.
Wow. Wow, Tim. Really? Even Rosny?
Even Rosny. What's to say that Mookie doesn't end up taking time from in center field?
Yeah, that's fair. I guess Hanley Ramirez has never been the picture of health either. That's what worries me. They've got so many guys on that team, Tim, that get injured, that the smart baseball move is to keep Mookie Betts, is to keep a four good outfielders and just rotate him around. But from a fantasy standpoint, that's death.
Well, yeah, and you know what? You're not going to rotate Hanley Ramirez around anything, so you can rule that one out.
Yeah, but he'll get injured, Tim. He's going to get hurt.
No, Hanley get hurt? Oh, I'm shocked, Richard. but you know, when you start looking at trying to project forward as to what these guys will do, the crux of my plan always has been and always will be trying to max out on at-bats, innings pitched, getting those playing time opportunities. Well, when the playing time opportunities aren't clearly defined, where do you go with it? I simply have to move on.
That's true, and it's a real shame because I think the upside with Mookie Betts is very high. In fact, we've been until all this discussion, Tim, Mookie Betts having a better year this year than Gregory Polanco, and just by sheer counting stats and at-bats, I mean, Gregory Polanco could have the better year if Mookie Betts truly only gets 300 to 350 at-bats.
Yeah, it's a shame because at this stage of the game, and that's for you, David Papa, by the way. At this stage of the game, I want to see 5 push-ups. Betts is by far the better player.
Totally agree. Tim, let's talk about another potential. And you wrote your sleeper article out for Roto-Rop and did a fine job. Always a great read. And you had your buddy, Jonathan Broxton, the man of the 52-inch waist. Remember that picture, Tim? Who was in his pants? I forgot who that was. Some small player was sitting in his pants. Remember that picture?
I don't want to know who's getting into Jonathan Brock.
No. Okay, Tim, get your mind out of the gutter. He had his pants off, and some guy held up his pants and actually put both of his legs into one of Jonathan Brock's legs. And I cannot remember, and unfortunately I don't have the chat room up because I'm having trouble loading it on my laptop. Maybe somebody in the interactive chat room, Tim, if you can monitor that, can remember which player it was. But it was like a normal size player. I mean, Jonathan Broxton is a huge, huge man. And what Ron Renicky came off and said is, I'm not sure who our closer is yet. We're going to figure that out during spring training. And you've said he's got the job. Draft them. Don't expect a whole lot, but draft them. What are you thinking now?
Well, you know, my premise for picking Broxton, I actually own him in one league I've already drafted, was the fact that the Brewers weren't going to be spending an extra $10 million on K-Rod when they're already committed to, I believe it's $9 million with Broxton. The Brewers don't have a lot of cash to toss around, so Broxton's done the job before, and he's been effective, so I thought they would give him first shot at it. But just this week, apparently, the owner of the Brewers has been rumored to be talking to Mr. K-Rod, so maybe K-Rod's value is coming down enough where the Brewers will, you know, roll the dice on him. I know the Jays are probably also looking at K-Rod right now, being that their bullpen is rather unsettled. But like I said, my premise was the fact that they're paying Broxton a good chunk of change. They'll give him the shot.
Yeah, I mean, his stuff's still pretty good, Tim. I mean, it's not the 94, 95 he used to throw. It's, you know, it's come down a mile per hour. At least it did last year. I mean, he's still got a great strikeout rate, doesn't walk a whole lot, but he catches too much of the plate. Basically, for scouting terms, that's poor command. So he's probably got average command at best. And people hit home runs off of him. People get good at him, and he gives up a lot of runs. And that's death for a closer. You have 2 or 3 blow-ups, Tim, and you might lose your job that way. So if it's not K-Rod, which it sounds like it could be, and it's not Jonathan Broxton, which you're saying it is, I mean, who else is there? I mean, I looked through the Roto World on their depth chart, and first of all, I didn't recognize half the guys that were there. I mean, who is it?
Good question. I think it could be one of a number of people, Rich, and I don't have any favorite per se because I think they're all about the same. The one guy that intrigues me is Jim Henderson, who had the job a couple of years ago. Pending health, he's done it before. I'm not sure when he's going to be ready to go, but when he is
labrum
ready
surgery, to go, the tear in his labrum and labrum surgery, Tim. So I mean, that's a little dicey there, but that's a good one. Anybody else?
No, I think it's a crapshoot and something you're going to have to watch very carefully in spring training. Find out who Renicky likes as his setup guy and make your decision once they make their decision.
So Tim, I need to just very quickly have a diversion here, and I did bring up Roto World. I know you're a huge guy in the fantasy industry, and I'm really not, Tim. I just do a dopey radio show that people seem to like the site about prospects. But I do have a bone to pick with the Roto World guys, and I used to, and in fact, I still read Roto World multiple times during the day. They've become less effective now that Twitter is really they get all their stuff on Twitter, Tim. So, but it's right. Still a great site. But Tim, the day took the cake. It was on Edwin Encarnacion. I don't know if you saw this, Tim. The Blue Jays have decided to use Edwin Encarnacion at first base this season. Okay, fact. That's been said, and great. But then they give their commentary, Timmy, and this is what they put in their commentary, that he's going to do. That's going to free up DH time now for the following people: Justin Smoke, Danny Valencia, Deanna Navarro, and Derek Barton. Now, Tim, you see where my rant is going. Now. Wait a minute here, Tim. Now, first of all, Derek Barton is a plus defender. So if he's going to play at all, it's going to be at first base as fill-in when E5 gets hurt or something like that. Tim, this is a guy who's got a 40-grade hit. He's got 30-grade raw power and 20-game in-game power. I mean, this guy is not an offensive player. You cannot say on a website that Derek Barton has a chance to play designated hitter, Tim, when a designated hitter is, all you do is hit the ball. Tim, when you can't hit the ball, how can you be a designated hitter?
Well, you forgot to mention one thing, Rich. He also owns about 10, 15 bucks of your Fab money, doesn't he?
30, Tim. It still pains me that I don't even want to talk about it. That just brought up an ugly. But so anyway, that's my rant on Roto World. I'm just kidding, everybody. Anytime I get a chance to rant about Derek Barton, I must do that. Timmy, the other great news article, and I hope this is true, and I think it was fantastic, was the picture of Jesus Montero. We talked and laughed about Pablo Sandoval, but if you saw the picture of Jesus Montero, the svelte Jesus Montero, and this was a kid 3 or 4 years ago, one of the best prospects in baseball. I'd seen him multiple times when he played in Double-A. He looked svelte back then, and a great bat speed. I mean, really good baseball player, and he's been a horrible major league player. Part of the reason has been just the fact that he has been overweight. Well, I don't know if you heard this. Last year, late in the season, there was a big blow up where he was out in, I think it was Tacoma, and a scout that works for the Seattle Mariners sent him an ice cream sandwich when he was in the dugout, and apparently Jesus Montero went absolutely nuts, saying, "How dare you," and so forth and so on. The scout, which was a cross-checker, actually got fired because of the prank. But maybe he did the best thing for Jesus Montero because he lost a ton of weight. He looks great, Tim. I don't know if he's got a chance to even make the team, but I got to tell you, this is a guy with a ton of talent.
Yeah, you know, I think that checker did him a huge favor. I think that was a massive wake-up call. You know, he reported to camp last year. What was it, at 270, 275? He looked absolutely bloated, absolutely terrible. This year, you can tell that I think Montero is realizing his chances of having a career are sliding away very quickly. And all of a sudden, he's taking things very seriously because he actually looked chiseled. He looked great. He really did. I hope he gets a chance. He's worked very hard to get himself back in the game, and I take my hat off to Jesus Montero. A great job this offseason, and hopefully it'll translate at some point in time into playing time.
Now, if you've got him in a dynasty league and you've held him on this long, like the great Marcus Potter has, you might as well just keep holding on to him at least for another year and hope that the better body turns into some playing time, which turns into some level of success. And again, to me, it's a real feel-good story for me because I love it. I love these transformation reclamation projects that really pan out. Tim, let's finish up with our outfield preview. We started it off last week. We got all the way down to number 20. We're going to go from 21 to 120, I believe, for the rest of it. We're going to skip around a little bit here, Tim. And again, let's start off with 21 to 30, and I'll have you you kind of comment on these guys. Number 21 is Charlie Blackman coming in at an ADP of 70. Christian Yelich at 83. Jason Hayward at 85. Your buddy Cole Calhoun at 93. Jay Bruce all the way down to 94, just a few years ago, a third-round pick. Matt Holliday slipping was a number one draft pick, draft pick just, 4 years ago now at an ADP of 97. The Mookster, Mookie Betts, I'm sure that's going to drop at 107. Ruzny Castillo, 117. Ryan Zimmerman, I can't believe he's listed as an outfielder, but I guess he got enough time in left field. He's an outfielder. And J.D. Martinez at 120. Tim, give me your thoughts on those 10.
There are some absolutely great options in here. Cole Calhoun, he's a steal at that stage of the game. You add in the at-bats that he missed while he was getting jerked around the first 2 months of the season last year. You know, you could be looking at potentially 110 runs scored, 20-plus home runs, and a sprinkling of stolen bases. Hayward is going to be batting in the meat of that order in St. Louis. I like Jason Hayward. Christian Yelich, another player, massive run scored potential, and I think we're going to see a little bit of a spike in the power. The guys that I'm looking at avoiding in this group are Charlie Blackman. That second half just didn't get it done, and a .241 batting average on the road. And, of course, the two guys in Boston I'm going to be avoiding like the plague.
It was interesting when you first started off. You go, there's some really, really good people here, but I found this tend to be mixed because I'm a little stronger still on Mookie Betts than you are. But that Charlie Blackman, and to me that Martinez, I'm just not a fan of JD Martinez repeating that. But let's talk about the guy you didn't mention. I didn't mention, and that's Jay Bruce, Tim. This is a guy with massive power. Really hurt last year. He's still young, 25, 26 years old. I don't have his exact age in front of me. Jay Bruce in the seventh round, Tim, that feels like value to me.
Yeah, that feels like serious value to me. I strongly believe that last year was an aberration. He was hurt. He came back very, very quick. And he never got on track. Not pretty well from the get-go last year. He's, 28 years old heading into this season, right in the peak prime years for power to explode. I wouldn't be at all surprised to see Jay Bruce hit 30-plus homers this year. I wouldn't be shocked.
I would not be shocked at all. Timmy, let's move on. We'll try to keep going. 32, we start with Ben Revere. It's interesting for a guy with, one real tool, speed, and I guess if he continues to hit, he's going to be a batting average guy. But he comes in at number 31, excuse me, Alex Gordon. Forgot about him. A little worried about him because he's still injured. Danny Santana at 33. Jorge Soler at 34. GP Gregory Polanco at 35. Marina at 36. All those guys going in the ninth round now in the 9th and 10th round, now in the 11th round. Jason Hayward at 37, Yasmani Tomas at 38, Brett Gardner at 39, Leonis Martin, Will Myers, Shinshu Chu, Melky Cabrera, Brandon Moss, all in the 11th round, Tim. So that now we're at the top 44. So break down from 31, Alex Gordon down to Brandon Moss at 44.
Well, I think Gordon's going to be fine, but there's some, there is definitely some concerns with regards to that wrist. Ben Revere,
I'm really concerned. Tim, I'm really concerned that wrist surgery. I mean, that's where the power comes from, and Gordon's not going to get you a whole lot of stolen bases. That scares me to death.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens in spring training, and I want to see some at bats from Gordon before I make a final decision there. You move on to Ben Revere. All speed, he's going to get you a ton of stolen bases. Danny Santana at 33 definitely, I think, should be slotted into shortstop. He qualifies at the outfield. There's no doubt about that. But I had a question from a Matt Coleman. He wanted us to share our thoughts on Danny Santana. Well, what do you think, Rich? Do you see value there as a pick somewhere in the 7 to 10 range at shortstop?
I don't, Tim. I've never been a big Danny Santana fan. I never saw much of a prospect, and I was actually shocked at how good his year was last year. So, Tim, he's not on my draft list.
Okay, no, that's fair enough. I, I'm concerned about the batting average. That's got to come down. But when you look at shortstop, it's pretty thin, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it is. I'm trying to bring him up, Tim, but I have a very slow connection. I'm surprised that I've been able to stay on. You've only cut out twice, and I missed three sentences, but was able to somehow figure out what you were talking about, which was good. So if I'm now on Danny Santana here. Last year, 405 at-bats, and Tim, he walked 4% of the time. So this is a guy that's a free swinger that you do worry about that. Ground ball rate, a very high ground ball rate, but he's got enough speed there. So I don't know, Tim. He's a very, very aggressive hitter, and I think you could see some adjustments made by pitchers in this sophomore year, and I'm just not a fan.
Okay, fair enough. Moving on to that, there's a group at 34, 35, and 36 off the board that I absolutely love, and I'm going to own one of these three guys, hopefully, in all of my leagues, and that's Jorge Soler, Gregory Polanco, and Marcell Ozuna.
Wow.
I don't think you can go wrong with any one of those three guys. Like them an awful lot. You go down, Yasmani Thomas at 38. Hey, I think the power is going to be there. I think the batting average is going to be there as well. Not favorably, but it will be there. About 220 worth would be my guess. Ton of home runs and the potential for it. I don't like the odds on the batting average. And one guy that has fallen a fair bit that I like an awful lot this year, I'm still a believer in Leonis Martin in Texas. I think he was a product last year of the total collapse of that team. And if Prince is back and healthy and Chu shows some form of health along with the pitching, I think we can see Martin bounce back and produce close to 40 stolen bases with maybe 7 to 10 home runs. I'm very bullish on Leonis Martin, Rich.
That's interesting. What about Shinshu Chu? Are you thinking that he's going to have a bounce back year? I mean, in an OPB league, I still think he's a guy to own. But what about a traditional batting average? That's a traditional rotisserie league with 5x5 traditional categories.
I'm not all that bullish. We're talking about leg problems. We need to see 15, 20 stolen bases, I think, out of Chu to hold his value in a standard league. And I really have my druthers that we're going to see that level of speed this year, Rich.
The next batch from 45 to 62, we got Span Rios. I'll love your opinion about that. There's your buddy, Avisel Garcia, all going in the 13th round. AJ Pollock, Lorenzo Cain, Chris Davis, a KHRAS, who I love this year. I think there's 25 home run potential. Jock Peterson, sitting right at number 51 in the 14th round. Adam Eaton in the 14th round. Crawford, Josh Hamilton. Arizmendi Alcantara in the 15th round, Oswaldo Arcia in the 16th round, Marlon Byrd, Rajah Davis, Desmond Jennings, Michael Kadire, Austin Jackson, Curtis Granderson in the 17th round, and then Steven Sousa sitting in the 18th round and climbing up list, Michael Morse, Coco Crisp, Torrey Hunter, Dexter Fowley, and Dalton Pompey and Nick Markakis all going in the 19th round. Tell me, breakdown 45 to 69.
Okay, some of my favorite players happen to be lurking in this range, Rich. And
Let me guess. Let me guess, Tim.
Okay, go for it.
Marlon Byrd and Josh Hamilton.
Close, but no cigar.
Okay. Avisel Garcia, I know, is one. I'm going to say that's one. I'm going to say Oswaldo Arcia is another. And, well, if Steven Sousa is not one of your favorite players, Tim, then you should not be on the show. So I'm going to go Steven Sousa. Those are my three I got for you, Tim.
Yeah, I think Steven Sousa right now is everybody's favorite as a late pick. But the guy I was looking at was Dalton Pompey.
Dalton Pompey, of course. I know you've talked about him.
Yeah, I think if you're looking for cheap speed late with the potential for some power, but temper those expectations, he's still a kid. I think Avisel Garcia, if things break right, he could have the type of year that could vault him into the top 15 outfielders, Rich. That's how bullish I am on Avisel Garcia.
What about Chris Davis, Tim? I know a lot of people aren't high on him. I think he's got a better hit tool than he showed last year. He had like three walks before the All-Star break, and I think showed a lot better plate discipline in the second half, something that he always did in the minor leagues. He is a little bit of an older player now, I think 27 years old. I love the power.
Yeah, I like Davis. I think you can pencil him in for 20 to 25 home runs, 65-70 RBIs. I think what you see is what you get. I don't think there's a whole lot more to be gotten there. But if you're looking for power in that range, yeah, I like Chris Davis. A.J. Pollock could have a huge year. Another guy that was hurt last year. Yep. that's got really, really a high ceiling as far as I'm concerned. The guys that I'm avoiding from that group, Jock Peterson. Don't have to have him. Not in that group. Marlon
Curtis
Bird.
Granderson? Curtis
who?
Granderson? Curtis
yeah.
Granderson?
Yeah. Who?
Who?
Yeah. Hey, I love Curtis Granderson. I think he's a great ambassador for the sport, and the game. He's a great guy, but I think when you start looking at the players in and amongst the group that he is currently in, I don't see a whole lot of upside happening there, Rich. I really don't. And if you want somebody cheap for speed who could give you some excellent runs scored, even Austin Jackson in Seattle, I'm looking at my mock drafts, and he's getting absolutely no love, and I mean none. And there's a guy that could potentially score a pile of runs, get you 20 stolen bases.
Yeah, I think I have him in my NFBC league. I think he went really, really late as well. And I mean, part of the problem when he was in Detroit, he got taken out of the leadoff spot by Ian Kinsler. And that's what his whole fantasy game was run score, Tim, if you recall. And he's now gone to Seattle, which it looks like he will be back at the leadoff spot, which I think is helpful. Just one small little comment on Chris Davis. I do worry about Geraldo Parra there. Might take some at-bats away, so kind of keep that in mind as you're at the draft table. But, Chris, we must talk about Alexi Rios, who has said that he's going to run more, and that's good because his power looks like it's gone. What do you expect out of Alexi Rios this year?
I've set the bar very, very low to basically nothing. I'm avoiding Rios. I just, with the options that are available in this round, I just think there are some very, very solid gambles that will possibly provide you 30 home runs. You're looking at potentially 30 to 40 stolen bases out of some of this group, a pile of runs scored. Why would you want to take a chance on Alex Rios, I guess, is my question to you, because I don't.
I don't either, Tim. And, you know, it's one of those guys that he's hot or he's cold. He has a good year. He has an awful year. Not a bad year, an awful year. And he just crushes your soul. And I'm done with him, Tim. And if you play fantasy baseball for a while, that's where you just get done with people. Tim, we're not going to go through everybody next, but I just want to call out a couple of names and get your initial reaction. Going down here a little bit, Alan Craig, who was a darling of fantasy baseball last year. I think he went in the fifth or sixth round, Tim, all the way down to the 21st round. Never a lot of power. Now playing in Boston without a home. Doesn't even have, you know, we talked about the outfield's problems. I mean, he's not even considered. He's like the fifth or sixth outfielder now out there. I guess he's the backup to Napoli in case Napoli gets hurt. What are your thoughts on Alan Craig?
I don't see any reason at this stage of the game why he's even draftable in a 12-team set. In a 15-team, if you want to take a chance on your bench, sure, but he's just about at the stage, Rich, where he's going to be sitting on waiver wires come the beginning of seasons.
Right after that is Dustin Ackley in the 22nd round and Dominic Brown. Dustin Ackley, number two overall pick. I believe it was in 2010 or two. Yeah, I think it was 2010. And Dominic Brown, who was a top prospect, these guys have really underperformed. Any kind of love at all that these guys can perform better than the 22nd round?
Yeah, I like Ackley. I really do. If you take a look at what he did in the second half last year, his first half absolutely stunk it up. But he's always going to be a favorite of mine, Rich, because he was one of the key players I managed to pick up off the waiver wire in tote that led me to victory. His second half was very strong last year. If he can show up for the first half this year, I think you got yourself a good, solid little fifth outfielder.
That's interesting. So looking at what he did last year overall, Tim, was 14 home runs, 8 stolen bases, 245 batting average, 82% contact rate, which you like. He is a little bit aggressive at the plate, though. What about Dominic Brown? Is Dominic Brown just going to be one of those uber athletic guys that the Phillies love to draft and just doesn't have the baseball acumen?
Yeah, I tend to think so, Rich. you know, we saw that one glimmer of hope, what was it, 2 years or so ago, and now I guess his claim to fame is he's still part of the Philly youth movement.
That's, I guess he's one of the younger players, Timmy.
That's it.
Michael Bourne, Tim, going in the 24th round. This is a guy that you could guarantee 50 stolen bases. Now, he said he's going to run more. Francona said he's going to run more. Is he going to run more, Tim?
Yeah, I think he is going to run more. He's one of my sneaky little picks at the end that I definitely have an interest in, because if he can get the stolen bases back up into the 30-plus range, he's going to be in the leadoff role in Cleveland. There's runs scored. For a guy that's getting drafted as the 82nd outfielder off the board, I think there's some value potential there, Rich.
Yeah, 2011. Stolen bases, 2012, 42, 2013, 23 last year, 10. Michael Bourne, 10 stolen bases, 10. That's impossible.
Well, yeah, you know, I think Giancarlo Stanton just about outperformed him in that category. There's something wrong when that happens.
Two other guys, final guys, Tim, and then we'll start to wrap up the show. B.J. Upton, still going in the 24th round. I mean, there is power, there's speed. He's going to get some playing time because they can't trade him, et cetera. Your thoughts on him? Kevin Kiermaier, outfielder with Tampa, who's a defensive stud but actually has a little power, has a little speed, was a platoon guy last year, but he's a sneaky little player, in my opinion, that could do like a 15 to 18 home runs and 10 to 12 stolen bases.
Yeah, who's this B.J. Upton you're talking about? Didn't he change his name?
Yeah, that's right. Melvin. I mean, B.J. is a horrible name, too, because it has, in today's modern society, has terrible connotations. We won't go there as a family show. But mm-hmm. I'd rather be called B.J. than Melvin. I mean, that's a horrible name. If any of our listeners' first name is Melvin, I apologize. It's a terrible name, Tim. That's a name that our father's father generation would have been called.
Didn't all the Mel's have garages or restaurants, Rich?
Exactly, like Mel's Diner. Exactly, Tim. Yeah. And that's who Mel is.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Hey, I wish whoever he is, I hope his other personality and alter ego shows up this year, because you'd have to think somewhere there's got to be some talent left in that body, Rich. I'll never forget the first time I saw B.J. Upton playing for Tampa. It was in Minneapolis. And you watch the players as they head onto the field for their warm-up. And Upton he stood out so remarkably. Like, man, he ran like a gazelle. You know, the power. He was an impressive specimen of a ball player. And for him to see him drop off that quick, that's a shame. It really is.
Well, I mean, Jason Hayward really never kind of lived up to his potential in Atlanta. B.J. Upton, as you just said, completely imploded. You kind of begin to wonder, Tim, if maybe the problem was with the coaching staff and how they were actually coaching these hitters, because, I mean, Freddie Freeman has turned into a great player, but there's a lot of batters who have underperformed, and to me, that's something that they need to take a hard look at, and maybe with a new general manager in place that they'll start to do that.
Yeah, I would hope so, because, like you said, there have been numerous players that have underperformed there. Can I mention one more outfielder, Rich?
Yeah, Tim, because then I'm going to ask you for your three sleepers.
Oh, in that case, we'll No, nah, he's not one of my sleepers. Ryan Ruan, Texas. I love the kid. Right now, his competition is Smolinski, I believe, and Shinorf, is it?
Yeah, two household names, Tim. I mean, it's even hard to say Smolinski's name. So,
I'll take full credit if I pronounce them correctly. But Nate and Jake, I don't think are the preferred choice in Texas. I think if Mr. Rua has himself a decent spring, I think he could have the bulk of the at-bats in left field in Texas, and I think there could be some sneaky value there as a late pick. He's one of my deep sleepers, and, you know, it all depends how he performs this spring, but I think the kid's got a shot.
Well, Tim, him is one of your sleepers. Give me two more sleepers that you're really high on that are fairly late. Let's call it after 50.
Hmm. after 50. Well, I already mentioned Avisail Garcia, I think, can return a huge, huge, huge dividend for you. But, you know, Michael Bourne, 82nd outfielder off the board, he's definitely somebody I'm taking a chance on. A.J. Pollock at 48, I think Pollock has got another opportunity to return huge dividends. And probably my favorite in that later group has got to be Oswaldo Arcia. I think this kid, if his back holds up, I think we've got 30 home run potential, and at the stage of the draft he's going, you're not going to find too many guys with 30 home run potential.
Tim, it's me. It's got to be Steven Sousa. If he doesn't do really well, I don't know if he'll be able to come on this air. I might just have to truly retire this job. You have to find somebody else to co-host with, Tim, because I have it all in on Steven Sousa. It's I've been pimping him for over a year now. And so he's going to get his chance. I love Arcia as well. I don't think the batting is going to be great, but I think there is 30 home run potential. And Tim, I know he's not a sexy pick, and I know you don't like him, but I'm going with Dexter Fowler. Different environment with the Cubs, leadership opportunities. I know he had the same leadership opportunities in Houston, but I still like Dexter Fowler. Not to be a top player, but I still think he could potentially get you back to 15 to 20 home runs and some stolen bases as well. So I like Dexter Fowler, somebody that I can get as my fifth outfielder.
Yeah, I don't have any problems with Fowler as a fifth outfielder at all. And, you know, thinking back historically here, Rich, you know, Tony had his Batista, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I had my Cowboy Cole Calhoun, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's your turn. It's your turn to hit, Rich.
Come on, Tim. That's not fair. I have
Jose, be the guy.
I've had Jose Altuve, man. Come on. I mean, people did. He wasn't in. Nobody knew who Jose Altuve was. I started talking about him. So I feel like I'm done. I did that. The Jose Bautista was the pool, though. I don't think any of us will never be able to do a pool. Like, I don't know how in the heck Tony did that one. But Tim, I mean, Jose Bautista went on to be a first round draft pick. And if you can do that out of total obscurity, it's just time to say, I'm done. I'm done here. My work is done here.
Yeah, I ate fried crow for a long time over that one, because I can still remember when he said that, and I laughed at him and I said, yeah, look at the batting average, 230, 220, whatever it was. And sure enough, Tony nailed it, and I ate fried crow.
Speaking of Tony, so we've got that's our outfield preview, the final outfield preview. We've got next week, Timmy, we're going to do starting pitchers, and then the week after is our annual sleeper podcast. And like last year, I'm going to ask Tony to be on with us again.
That is absolutely awesome. Looking forward to it, Rich.
So, Tim, we were going to talk a quick out of the gate. That was the name of the topic here. And I do want to go back to that, because I think it's an interesting topic. I know one that you'll have some comments on. And it's from one of our Facebook friends. It is Monte Sanborn writes, I'm officially done with mock drafts. Seems like everyone I participate in has team owners that are trying out, in quotes, an off-the-wall strategy that distorts the way the draft unfolds. The efficacy, Tim, I mean, Monty must be a smart guy using that word. I think I'm pronouncing that right, Tim. Efficacy of the ADP data has been challenged. I kind of agree with Monty, because it's not just trying out different strategies, but, you know, and I do this as well, Tim. I want to see what my first three or four selections are going to look at, and I just put it on auto draft and off I go. Tim, it's almost impossible to find a mock draft at CBS, ESPN, or Yahoo that, let's say you're doing a 12-team mock, that all 12 guys are in it at the end.
Well, yeah, I was talking to somebody yesterday. It was either on the Facebook page or it might have been in the chat room of my mock draft, and somebody took, I believe it was Adam Wainwright was in the first round and Jeff Supan in the second, something like that, Rich.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't even know he's still playing. Is he still playing?
I don't think he is, Rich.
Okay.
And that, you know, that is one of the big problems when you get into mock drafts at these big sites, is you get kids playing around, and I agree, under those set of circumstances, it's a total waste of time. Get out of there, bail, end it all, and don't waste your time, because that's all you're doing. But if you manage to get into the right mock draft with the right people, They are a very, very valuable tool. I've been running mine now going on about 8 years, and I don't mean to pat myself on the back here, but I think I'm probably going to anyways, Rich. If you organize a mock draft and you get the right people that are serious about the game, they provide an incredible amount of value. They really do. They're a great learning tool. And on top of that, you've got the interaction between all people drafting, and there's a lot that can be learned from that.
Yeah, so I mean, it's definitely a mini commercial for your Sunday nights with Tim. But you know, the one thing that it does bum me out, Tim, is like you're out on Couch Manager, and they've got their own rankings. But what happens is when you hit the draft and you're drafting out of ESPN, people use those rankings for the most part. And most players, Tim, unless they're crazy like you, aren't going to go through and rank 500 players and go by their pref list of that. They're going to have their few handful of favorites that they have, and they're going to simply draft by what ESPN said. And if I've got five or six players in the queue of outfielders and I'm in the 150s, I'm probably going to pick one of those. That's just the way it's done. So if you practice drafting somewhere else and then you go to the real thing, sometimes, oh, I could have gotten Dalton Pompey in the 14th round, and then all of a sudden ESPN has him ranked in the 11th round and he's gone.
Well, yeah, it all becomes very relevant, Rich. If you're drafting at a site and you haven't spent a lot of time with the rankings, of course you're going to fall into using the rankings that are right in front of you. When I look at a site that I don't normally mock draft on, and I look at their rankings real quickly, what it says to me is there's an opportunity for me to find players because people will be doing exactly that. You look at the numbers and you sort of giggle a little bit, and away you go. If you draft with a good site that has reasonable rankings, even if you end up with the odd robot, it doesn't really skew things that badly, Rich.
Okay. Interesting comments on mock drafting. And Timmy, we're going to wrap it up for this evening, a little bit shorter than normal, just because I do have a dodgy connection here, and I want to, I think it's time to get off, Tim. So I don't want to push my luck.
Yeah, I was going to say bail before it bails for you.
Exactly, because I just missed half of your sentence. That's what I thought I'd do. Timmy, tell us what you've got going on this week. I know tomorrow and Wednesday, you and I have a real draft going on, two real drafts.
Yeah, well, the podcast tonight, tomorrow night, we've got the Patton and Company 20 team mixed. Wednesday night, we've got the insiders draft. And Thursday night, I'm doing a mock with the fine folks at Baseball Prospectus. They invited me to do a mock for their fantasy package. So I've got four solid days of baseball coming up. And before you know it, we're right back into Sunday again, Rich.
I know, and we will be back next Sunday, and I appreciate Tim in particular being able to do this with me on Monday. Sorry for everybody waiting to have that Monday morning commute listening to our babble, but hopefully you'll enjoy it on Tuesday. Tim, I thought it was a great podcast. I kind of like doing it away from my home. I get re-energized.
Well, yeah, and then now you can go downstairs for a nice late supper and find somebody who's going to take $20 on Prince Fielder, right?
Yeah, that's right. I will be going back over to, I'm actually at the Cosmopolitan. I'm going to go over back over to Caesars tomorrow and put down that $20 on Prince Fielder. Guys, I do write for prospect361.com. I have not published anything in a week and a half, but this week I come out with my AL rookie impact players. I think there's 16 or 17 of those. Tim, you'll be happy to know that Ryan Rua is on there. And then next week I come out with my NL impact rookie players. So they're off to editing, and hopefully they'll be done, and then I will post them up. But Tim, we're back on Sunday, and have a great rest of the week.
I certainly will, Rich. Enjoy your time in Vegas, and we'll catch all back next Sunday. Thanks.
All righty, Timmy, be well.
Can I please feel your heart with last summer's breakdown in this winter's